very recently, we could aspire to say that all people... Well, welcome back to Midpoint, friends, on July 2nd, 2025. I'm your host, Shelley Reback. And I don't know about you, but I am feeling heartbroken and enraged in equal measure over the state of our country on this cusp of American Independence Day, July 4th. We formed this country so that all men, and yes, it was all white men until too recently, but up until very recently, we could at least aspire to say that all people had the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. For most of our history during my lifetime, I thought we were always striving to make America a more perfect union. But now we are building concentration camps in the Everglades and caging people, most of whom did nothing more than come here to make a better life for their families. Now Lady Liberty's doors are firmly shut to all but white South Africans. Don't come knocking if you're black or brown or have ever criticized Donald Trump or his cronies. You're not welcome, and we'll put you in a cage and maybe send you to a gulag in El Salvador. I thought that we were working to keep our people healthy, safe, and prosperous. But now I know that elected Republicans, at least, only care to protect their own and the billionaires who keep them in office. 17 million of us who are losing health care are deemed expendable. Hungry kids can just suffer. And the debt service that we will saddle our children and grandchildren with, hell, maybe even our great-grandchildren with, will keep them indentured and poor for generations. When did we become so cruel? When did we come to tolerate such cruelty from our elected officials? I'm taking my rage and sadness right to a qualified source today as I welcome one of our hardest working elected officials, Fentress Driscoll, the now term limited leader of the minority party Democrats in the Florida House. Fentress has been representing Florida House District 67 since 2018, and her term is now coming to an end, so I'm anxious to find out what she can tell us with the hindsight of 8 years in the legislature and where she sees Florida going in the future. So welcome back to Midpoint, Fentress Driscoll.
Thank you for having me, Shelley.
Wow, it's been a lot, hasn't it? This week, the cruelty quotient from elected Republicans has really ramped up, hasn't it?
It really has. I mean, it's heartbreaking to watch.
So let's be clear. It is Republicans who are taking away health care, food stamps, energy cost subsidies, education programs, and on and on. This isn't an opinion I'm offering. This is not in my opinion. These are facts. Democrats have fought against every one of these losses. But elections have consequences, and there are just too few Democrats to stop the train, right? I mean, too few Democrats to amass enough leverage to make a real difference in the legislation that gets passed, right? That's true in Washington, and it's true in Florida, right?
It is true. So, you know, in Florida, we're in the super minority, which is really tough. In D.C., they don't have the numbers to stop it. But we continue to do what we can to speak out against it and encourage the people to do the same.
I think that, you know, the advice that I've seen floating around for Democrats is just to throw sand in the gears as much as possible. You know, we saw Senator Cory Booker stand up and do his marathon speech. You know, Schumer was supposedly going to read the entire 960-page super ugly bill that they voted on yesterday. You know, there's very little, practically speaking, that the elected Democrats can do to stop all this horrible, cruel legislation. The most they can do is throw sand in the gears. And really, it seems like it's up to the people to be out there you know, trying to convince their elected Republicans. It doesn't, you know, there's frankly no point in calling the Democrats, I don't think, to do more. There's only so much they can do. Although we have seen that the people are demanding more of the Democrats. They want fighters, not folders, as was one of the campaign slogans, I think, in the New York City mayoral election, where Zoran Mamdani was just recently elected as the Democratic primary candidate for mayor of New York City. You know, fighters, not folders. I mean, that's what the people want to see. I mean, what do you see that in terms of the Florida Democrats? I don't see fighters, really, you know?
Oh, I see fighters every day.
Yeah?
It's amazing, yeah. I think there's a lot happening, though. It's a confluence of factors because, you know, in the House Democratic Caucus, we fight for every Floridian's freedom to be healthy, prosperous, and safe. We leave it all on the field every day. Our policy platform was all about affordability issues. How do we lower the cost of property insurance? You know, how do we push for more affordable housing, lower the cost of health care, really meeting the people where they are? But just to go back to your original question and, you know, your opening statement, how do we get here? How are things so cruel? And then these sharp lines between Republicans and Democrats. I would say that right now there certainly seem to be sharp lines between Republican and Democratic elected officials. But when I speak to the people writ large, when I speak to my neighbors and my constituents, they just want, like, they want solutions. And I'm starting to get the sense that they don't care who's delivering them, whether it's Republican or Democrats, but they want some solutions, and they don't know they don't like what is happening. They don't like the direction that the state is moving in or that the country's moving in. So I think there'll be some real opportunities in upcoming elections, and that would be my best advice to people. We have to stop focusing so much on, you know, well, this elected official is a Democrat, I can't vote for them. No, look at the policies behind them. Like, look at what they are pushing. Look at the values that they are putting forward, because I think we really are in a time of crisis and economic crisis. There are a lot of families hurting, especially right here in Tampa Bay, Shelley. We have, I think it's getting close to roughly, I saw the report, it's like one out of every four kids or so is on Medicaid. We've got a lot of ALICE families, which are the income-restricted families who spend more than 30% of their income on housing. Those are the issues that we need to focus on. And I'm certainly willing to work with anybody, Republican, Democrat, or Independent, or NPA, who's willing to focus on those kind of solutions. That's what we need.
I mean, from your mouth to God's ears, the goddess's ears, you know, I would hope. But I don't. I just... I hate to be such a Debbie Downer, frankly. But I just don't see the Democrats being competitive in Florida in the next election. I mean, we've had these special elections where the Democrats have performed better than expectations suggested that they would. But I mean, there's those small changes in voter excitement, in mobilization in a special election. Is that really likely to translate into, voter engagement in the general election? I mean, we are so far behind now in terms of Democratic voter registration compared to Republican registration. Mm-hmm. That's a new fact, you know, that has been growing, that separation in the numbers of people registering as Republicans versus registering as Democrats. The numbers of NPAs, no party affiliated voters, has grown enormously in the last, 10, 15 years. I despair, frankly, of the next election being, successful for Democrats, especially on a statewide basis. I don't know that, Florida Democrats have been written off by the national Democrats. We're not getting the money. We're not getting the organizers coming to the state to register Democrats, to get them engaged in the election and get out to vote. We don't have those resources like we used to when we were perceived as much more of a purple state. We may still be a purple state, as you suggest, but we're not perceived that way, and so people are not investing in Democrats in Florida. And the messaging, the messaging has been really ineffective, frankly. You know, we've seen that in the last several election cycles. You know, we've seen people saying, I don't see those solutions that you talk about that people want. I don't see those solutions, coming from the Democrats. where are we going? Like I say, I'm sorry to be such a Debbie Downer, but, you know, I've said it on television when I've been on Florida this week. I'm going to say it here now. Mm-hmm. We need help in making people believe that the things that you talk about that Democrats want to do are the things that they would be voting for if they voted for a Democrat.
Yeah. So you see me over here like kind of smiling because you are so on point, Shelley. And these are the real conversations that I think we need to start having on the center left and in the Democratic Party. So yes, special elections, the great thing about a special election is that it focuses all of our attention on one thing, which suggests to me that when we have a plan and we execute it well, we can win. I go back to the special election for Tom Keene in State House District 35 in the Orlando area last year. As Democratic leader, you know, I raised the funds for that race.
Right.
We raised $2.5 million. We won. And we won because we were on the ground knocking doors, talking to voters, and re-enrolling people in vote by mail. Our messaging was tight. We talked about affordability issues and abortion access, which is what the data showed us that that's what the voters wanted to talk about. And that's all we talked about. We didn't muddy the message with, you know, all these other issues, even though they're important. The environment is important. That's not what the data showed was important to that district. We stayed with the message. We raised the money to be competitive. We moved the numbers and gave Democrats an advantage over Republicans in vote by mail enrollment, and we won. Then comes the special, then comes the general election. And I think the challenge there is, so in the special election, it's not connected to the top of the ticket. It wasn't connected to Trump or Biden or Kamala Harris or any of that, right? It's just about the candidates, just about the messaging. It's really difficult in the general because you've got a lot of weight on the top of the ticket, either that's going to push you up or pull you down. I will tell you that each of the candidates in our program outperformed the top of the ticket because we were on the ground doing that data-driven messaging, engaging with voters, and re-enrolling people in vote by mail. The plan is there. The plan is if everybody has a plan, there's no plan. And so I think as Democrats and as those of us on the center left, we got to get a lot more strategic. It's not rocket science. And by the way, just the other side of 30 years ago, Republicans didn't have these advantages. They've been gaining them over time. It's the same roadmap. We can do it. We just got to decide we want to do it. When we decide what our messaging is, I think Democrats actually have great messaging. I just think we have a lot of messaging.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is, you know, if the national party puts out the messaging, are we going to follow it? If the state party does, are we going to follow it? When I put it out, are people going to follow it? My caucus does, but we don't get covered in the media the way that the Republicans do, so our message tends to get drowned out. It's not the Democrats have bad messaging. We just haven't figured out a great slogan. So I will give it to him. Trump, very good at campaigning, master campaigner. If you can just sit there and lie, I mean, yeah, like that's pretty easy to campaign, right? We don't do that, and so we haven't come up with a slogan to match his. That doesn't mean that we're bad at governing. We're actually really good at that, and
I think the statistics and the data show that Democrats are better at governing. Republicans mm-hmm. are better at getting elected, you know? I mean, that's how it's been for the last, you know, quarter of a century or more. I mean, well, what happened in the special elections, the last special elections, Josh Wheel, Gay Valamont in mm-hmm. the Panhandle. Again, we saw those elections. We saw the Democrats perform better than expected, maybe, but they still lost. And presumably, the same roadmap was followed in those special elections. What happened?
Yeah, but when you look at State House District 35 versus those two congressional special elections, the numbers were far better for Democrats in the State House special election. And that's also something to keep in mind, right? Because there was a lot of money spent on those congressional races.
Yeah,
two candidates who worked really hard. But if you just looked at the numbers, those were seats that we were never going to win. And so it got a lot of people's hopes up and false expectations. And you saw the narrative change. Like, if we can get closer, that's a win. That's how I look at it. So I look at that as a win. And it just goes to show you that what we can do when we focus our efforts. Now, let's go focus our efforts, I would say, instead on seats that are competitive. I don't like this strategy of filing candidates in every seat. I talked about it a little last cycle,
okay.
But now that I'm, you know,
almost free,
out,
right?
We'll speak real freely. It's not a good strategy. We say that, it drives Democratic excitement. What it really does is drives Republican turnout. in districts where the numbers are not close. It makes it more difficult for Democrats because we tend to not have as much money as the Republicans raise. You know, they got all the billionaires and stuff that give them all the money. So we need to be strategic. We need to focus on a few seats and build this brick by brick. Frankly, that's what the Republicans did when they built up power and took over control in Tallahassee. So nothing has to be permanent. None of this has to be permanent. Donald Trump was voted into office. He will be voted out. Well, I guess, you know, actually,
if we have another legitimate election.
If we have another election, right? Like he will have to go. And things change. And this is a very difficult time to live through. I don't want to betray that notion at all. And just because I'm an elected official doesn't mean that it's not hard for me either. Watching what's happening in the Everglades right now with the detention center is really heartbreaking. But I still maintain faith in people, but the people gotta want it, you know?
Well, let me go back to your statement, which is news to me and probably news to many of our listeners, that you think the strategy of running a Democrat in every race is not an effective strategy. What, you know, even if the Democrats improve in 2026 because of these greater numbers of registrants that came out of the special elections that we've been discussing, you know, there are just very few Florida seats that would be easy to flip coming up in 2026. The closest congressional race in 2024 was in Pinellas County with Anna Paulina Luna, who only won re-election by a margin of 9.6%. That's still a fairly high margin. There aren't any more Republican-held districts on the special election calendar coming up. And the two remaining elections for historically blue seats in Orange County, I just think that there aren't that many seats that we can target in the next election that are flippable in Florida. What do you think?
I think I would reframe that. I would say, thank God there are a few seats in Florida that are flippable, and let's go focus on those. Because here's the name of the game. You know, you want to try to get the numbers as even and balanced in the legislature as possible before we go through the next census, which will be in 2030, which would lead into the redistricting cycle in 2032, or 2031, I guess, technically. The point of all of this is that you want to have your numbers in the legislature as balanced as possible, because during redistricting, it's the state legislature that redraws the lines for both the state districts and the congressional districts. And the Republicans have held the gavel for a very long time, and they have drawn these districts just enough to be legal, but really to favor them politically. And it's not reflective of Florida's electorate, which is roughly divided a third, a third, a third, getting close to that, Democrats, Republicans, and no party affiliates. So there's still opportunity, but we've got to be strategic. Let's focus on the few seats that we can win. Let's do that every cycle. Let's build up our numbers, and let's try to have a better opportunity at redistricting. Let's go after these NPA voters. Let's put forward good statewide candidates who can energize an electorate, not necessarily, you know, focus on just complaining about what we don't like, but really put forth a vision for what we would do. And let's roll up our sleeves and do this.
What do you think about this redistricting case, this trial that just finished over the Florida Senate seat of Daryl Roussan?
You know, it's interesting to me that... I'm going to just say this. Thank God for our coalition partners who push for litigation to try to hold for accountability in the process, right? Because on the floor, we did everything that we could to point out unfairness with these maps. And of course, we don't have the numbers to secure those votes. But it really goes over to the, you know, gets kicked over to the courts to try to enforce some fairness. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with this map.
Yeah, we're waiting for the decision from the court on that.
Yeah, if folks don't know, you know, this is a district that spans both Hillsborough County and Pinellas.
Yeah, it jumps across the bay.
Right, and it's like, how do you make that make sense in terms of districts that are supposed to be, the requirements are compact, they're supposed to be contiguous.
And that the people in them have the same interests and concerns.
That's right.
All right. Well, you're listening to WMNF Radio in Tampa, Florida. My guest today is Fentress Driscoll, Minority Party Leader of the Florida House Democrats in the Florida legislature, now term limited and soon to be on to new things, presumably. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. I'm going to bring in some of our listeners who've been very patient. Betsy in Tampa, you're on the air. Betsy?
Oh, yes. I apologize. I didn't hear my name.
Okay.
I appreciate all that Mr. Skoll has done for us as Democrats in Florida, and she works very hard every day. So I get very, very frustrated with people saying that Democrats aren't doing enough. I knock on doors when it's 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this since Obama. When my daughter was taking a nap, I would go knock on doors when she was an infant. I knocked on doors for Fentress Hall. We are out there. We can't complain. We have to do something.
That's
take
true.
Take our frustrations and do stuff.
Right. That's true. Isn't that Michelle Obama said that? Do something.
Yes, and I have. Right. We have to reframe things. We have to rebrand. And we can't complain about what Democrats are not doing. We cannot do that. We have to take that energy, that frustration, and move forward. We have to move forward. This is not optional.
Okay, Betsy, thank
you. Depends on it.
Thank you so much for everything that you do. And, hopefully there are many, many more of you out there who are doing what needs to be done. Appreciate your call. Thanks very much. Thanks for your patience. Let me bring on some of these other listeners. Thanks. I've got Joe in Sarasota on the line. Joe?
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to kind of hit the subjects you guys went on. You got to give it to the Republicans and Trump. Great marketing strategy, turning the election and campaigning into a sports team with flags and mottos and, just blowing away.
Well, because he's an entertainer, right? He turned the whole election into, like you said, entertainment.
And so I have a slogan, let's talk truth. Let's just get simple, short, let's talk truth. Let's make a bunch of hats and flags and just give them out.
Let's talk truth. People,
And what you guys have just been talking about is districting and gerrymandering and term limits and campaign funding. Nobody talks about that. Everybody wants to talk about the economy and immigration. They focus on these things that are really going to change what's happening in our country.
All right. Well, thank you for the suggestion, Joe. Talk truth. What do you think about that, Fentress?
I'm literally taking a note. Thanks, Joe.
She is. She's typing on her phone, Joe. She's typing it down. She's taking that down. Let's talk truth. All right, Marie in Indian Rocks, you are on the air. Marie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Good morning. I appreciate you taking my call. The last 4 days I've been so unbelievably emotional over what I've seen going on. And I raised my nieces for 12 years, so I saw what children went through in the system. And with them trying to take school lunches away, just some basic stuff, when they keep saying that they're for, life and children, but their behavior and what they vote for is the complete opposite. And I agree with Joe, we have to keep short and clear. And the shortest, clearest thing I've ever seen is when they pull out a chart and they show short bullet points. This is what they say, this is what they're doing.
All right. Well, thank you, Marie,
simple as well.
Okay, thank you for that suggestion. bullet points. Yeah, I mean, you know, it has to be simple. It can't be a smorgasbord of issues, like you said earlier, Fentress. It can't, you know, it can't be, you know, we are a big tent party and we look to protect everybody's interests, but, you know, you can't run on a smorgasbord. You really have to run on your best thing on the menu, I think.
Right.
Jim Edwards, who is listening to us, sent an email in that says, you are discussing elections in 2030 and 2035, but the danger today is that we will not have elections in 2026. I think that you need to face this new reality. We need to do more than just wait until we win elections. You know, that is a, I hate to be so pessimistic again, but that is a real danger. You know, we've seen so many executive orders coming out of the Trump administration, including those that seem to try to take over elections, which are mm-hmm. always run by the states, not by the federal government. And yet he wants to take over election processes and election rules. And you know, there's a big danger that now that the United States Supreme Court has issued that case just the other day on barring national injunctions, nationwide injunctions.
Yes.
That you know, he could try to put forward some executive order that takes over states' elections, mm-hmm. and the states would each have to sue individually and wind their way through the court system all the way up to the United States Supreme Court before, you know, getting a decision that would ban him doing that.
Yeah, you know, on my day job, right, I'm an attorney. I practice
right?
with Swope Verdante, PA, in Ybor City, if anybody ever needs anything. but seriously, as an attorney, this is very disturbing to me, this Supreme Court ruling, because we've never seen this before, and it really looks like the Supreme Court is now in the business of furthering Donald Trump's agenda.
Yep.
But I just wanted to go back to the comment that the listener emailed in. So this is why I think it's so important that we have protests like the No Kings protest, which really wasn't led by the Democratic Party. But of course, you had Democratic electeds and folks on the center left supporting it. Part of how we got to this place where everybody is so, where there feels, it feels like it's so cruel, Shelley, and how things are so divided, is that we're all in our bubbles. And social media is a big part of that. The way people consume media is a big part of that. That's why what you do is so important with your radio show. That's why newspapers are still important. It's important for people to be able to get accurate information. But to the extent that folks are living in their echo chambers, you know, it's not that Democrats didn't warn that Donald Trump doesn't want to have another election.
Oh, yeah.
We did. I mean, Kamala Harris did that.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're listening to news in your bubble, if you're just living in your bubble, people outside of the Democratic bubble are not hearing that message. So efforts like the No Kings protest, which again, were not necessarily led by the Democratic Party, are so important because now more people are getting the message. So I don't want it to be thought that there's not enough being done. I do think Democrats are doing their part in what they can do within the confines and the bounds of the law, because we still do believe in the Constitution and in the rule of law. It's important for the people to join us in this. It's important for the people also to create pathways for Democrats to reach them. You know, like the other listener, was it Betsy, was talking about our brand. And by the way, Betsy, thank you for everything that you do with your volunteerism. It's amazing. I think we do need to be more positive on our brand. We need to lift up the ways that we fight back. I think we need to focus on a few seats rather than all these seats, because people like winners. Focus on the seats we can win. Let's get some wind in our sails, and let's allow those moments to turn into momentum so that we can really move some things forward and change some things in our country.
Well, it seems like a good segue into talking about what we have seen come out of the Florida legislature this year, where I know you and your caucus, you know, worked very, very hard to stop the worst of it, you know, being in a position that you couldn't promote the best of it. You know, really, I think you were relegated to trying to stop the worst of it. Let's run through a few of what I think are the most consequential pieces of legislation this session. But, you know, feel free to amend the list with what you think is significant. But I want to start with the new ballot initiative law, the citizen initiative putting something on the ballot to amend the Constitution. Now, let's start with the fact that the reason why we have these citizen initiative ballot measures, so many more recently than in the, you know, past, is because our elected officials don't want to do what the people want through legislation. You know, the people have spoken. They want to protect, you know, a majority of the people in Florida want to protect reproductive rights, want to protect abortion. A majority of the people in Florida want to legalize recreational marijuana. The legislators who are in power in the current days will not do that through legislation. So people have to come to the voters directly through the citizen initiative ballot process. And the Republicans and DeSantis, they don't like that because they have come so close to prevailing. They made it harder to win. They made it so that you need more than 60% of eligible voters to vote for a ballot initiative now in order to turn it into a constitutional amendment. That wasn't good enough for them. Now, this year, they made it even harder to bring a citizen initiative to the ballot. You know, what do you speak to that?
This was one of the most egregious, far-reaching, and controversial bills that passed this legislative session, putting significant restrictions on ballot initiatives, tightening deadlines, increasing penalties on groups who want to place an initiative on the ballot. It also places a limit on how many petitions a volunteer can collect, which is ridiculous. Organizers have to get detailed personal information from people signing petitions now, like a driver's license number or part of their social security number. And I think in this time of fraud that we're living in and so much online fraud, I don't know about you, but if a stranger walked up to me and said, hey, give me the last four of your social, I'm probably not going to want to provide it. So they are doing everything that they can to hamstring the voters from being able to have their voices heard. They also are putting our supervisors of elections under more
microscope.
Intense. Yeah, it's really ridiculous. And it is really, you know, I hope that this gets challenged as unconstitutional in the courts.
It is being challenged, right? It's being challenged by the people behind Florida Decides Healthcare, which is a political committee sponsoring a proposed constitutional amendment aimed at expanding Medicaid coverage, because Florida is, as you know, one of 10 states in the country that has not expanded Medicaid. And now with the big ugly bill that is moving its way through Congress, you know, more and more people, I think I saw just this morning, 990,000 people are projected to lose their Medicaid coverage in Florida once this big ugly bill comes to pass in Washington. Now, that's almost a million people in Florida will lose their health care. So it's gone well beyond not expanding Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Now people are losing their Medicaid coverage. They're losing their Obamacare subsidies. They're losing their health care.
Which, by the way, Shelley, will make health care more expensive for the rest of us.
Absolutely.
Right. Because typically, if you don't have health care, what do? If you're sick, you got to go to the ER, which just drives up costs for everybody. So it would be a far more, let's say, fiscally conservative option to expand Medicaid and get people the health care coverage they need.
Yeah, not only that, you may not have an emergency room to go to, because as rural hospitals cannot be paid for the services they provide to poor people, cannot be paid with Medicaid dollars, they're going to close. So you may not have an emergency room to go to if you live in a rural community, if this big ugly bill finally passes, which it looks like it will. But I wanted to finish what I said, is that the ballot initiative measure that is making it more and more difficult for the people to bring legislation or to bring constitutional amendments to the voters is being challenged by Florida Decides Healthcare. It's being challenged by Smart and Safe Florida, which is the group behind the recreational marijuana amendment. And they say that these additional restrictions on the state ballot initiative process, that took effect just yesterday, so now they are law, they are the law, will make it impossible for groups to gather enough signatures to place these measures before the voters next year. That was just argued in court on Monday.
Yeah.
So we're gonna see what happens with that. But, you know, they are restricting the process pretty much out of existence. They are making it impossible to pursue that.
Well, one part of the law that I hope withstands court scrutiny, because the bill also bars the state from spending taxpayer money on any advertisements or communications about constitutional amendments. And I know you probably tracked the whole Florida scandal where the governor...
That's the one good thing that came out of this bill is the ban on using taxpayer funds to put out messages about a proposed constitutional amendment. And as you mentioned, this is at the root of the whole Hope Florida scandal.
Yes.
This is at the root of that. Let me, you know, since we mentioned Hope Florida, we called the spirits of Hope Florida down upon us. Let me ask you, do you think Hope Florida, is that scandal ever going to go anywhere in terms of prosecution? Is anyone ever going to prosecute? I have a theory about it myself, but I want to hear what you have to say.
I think it might. I know that in Leon County, which is up in, you know, the Panhandle Tallahassee area, the state attorney is looking into this, and the House committee that did the investigation turned over everything to the prosecutors. So I hope that there will be criminal charges.
I it's really a federal matter more than a state matter. I mean, I know that technically there's dual jurisdiction, but this is really the kind of thing that you're supposed to get a federal prosecution out of. And, you know, I have a theory about this. Tell me what you think. And that is that, you know, currently Pam Bondi, our United States Attorney General, can you shake your head enough over that? Is sitting back on this and has not directed the Northern District of Florida U.S. Attorney to investigate or prosecute this. However, we know that Trump has endorsed Byron Donaldson for governor. If there's a chance that DeSantis is still going to try to push Casey, his wife, for governor against Byron Donaldson, I believe that's when Trump would tell Pam to go ahead and start an investigation and indictment process toward the DeSanti. That's my theory. I don't know. I could be wrong, but that's my theory.
That's a pretty good theory.
We'll see. We'll see.
That's some Game of Thrones right there. What that is.
All right, you're listening to WMNF Radio in Tampa, Florida. My guest today is Fentress Driscoll, Minority Party Leader of the Florida House Democrats in the Florida Legislature. She's now term limited and soon to be on to new things, perhaps. We're going to talk about that, too. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. All right, Mike in Sarasota has been very patient. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure enough.
I just I have a thought and then another thought after that, so please give me have a little patience.
Okay.
The basic problem with the Democratic Party is that their strategy is to assemble a diverse group of activist groups and try and put them all together, have this sort of big tent, and then a lot of what you might call minority groups, and represent them. Now, some of these groups will sometimes have some very controversial planks, I mean, as is common with almost any group. Now, what has been happening in the national elections, and I'm sure you can know many examples of this, is that the Republicans, who are very good marketers, have been able to tar the Democrats as being woke crazies. And I'll just give you a good example. Kamala Harris was tarred as endorsing sex changes for inmates, even if they were even if they were illegal aliens. Or, you know, the Democrats are tarred as being for
boys. Tarred. You're saying tarred. You mean accused tarred of this, not that they actually. Said this.
It's marketing.
Okay. Get to your point, Mike, because we got a lot of people lined up on the phone.
Okay, I'm about to get there. The Democrats are being identified as being for boys and women's sports. The Democrats have been identified as being for defunding the police. So what I think the Democrats need to do, and here's my final point, is they need to provide clear daylight. They need to stand up and say, that is absolutely not us. We are not for defunding the police. We're not for boys and women's sports. We're not for sex changes for all inmates.
I don't know. I don't think negative marketing really works, Mike. I don't know.
You don't think that negative campaigning works?
No, not negative campaigning. I don't think standing up as your slogan and saying we're not for this and we're not for that is workable. But let me ask Fentress. Thanks for your call. I've got like a lot of people backed up behind you, so I'm going to let you go. But thanks for your call. I don't think that works. So to say we're the Democrats, we're not for this, we're not for that. I don't know that's the best.
I can appreciate the point that he was making, which is that how do you manage a big tent? And this is how I try to manage it in my caucus. I just offer this because there are all these groups. I think could we recognize that we're all in pain?
Yeah.
I think could we recognize that workers, American workers, feel like they have been left behind? That there might be rural white folks who feel like they've been left behind, that there are black folks who feel like they've been left behind, there are LGBTQ folks, Hispanic folks, that there's so much pain, and that maybe if we stop focusing on like whose pain is the deepest or hurts the most and try to transform that collective pain into shared purpose, we can do it.
We can stop the trauma Olympics.
We can stop the trauma Olympics. The other thing is that it's something that you said, Shelley, made me think of this, right? Like we got to lead with the issues that are popular and that people care about. And maybe that's how we solve for that, Mike, is to talk about those issues the most. Like Charlie's Steakhouse is not putting out advertisements for its broccoli, even though its broccoli is delicious. People want to go there for steak. So maybe rather than focus on issues that don't impact the most people, we focus on the issues that are the most popular and impact the most people, like the issues like affordability. Maybe that's what we do.
Well, it's worked in the New York mayoral election. Mm-hmm. You know, Mom Donnie has really focused on those kitchen table issues, you know, make New York more affordable. That was his whole platform, pretty much. All right, Lenny in Gulfport, you're on the air. You've been patient. Thank you. Lenny?
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much, and thank you for having your guest, the legislator. I'd like to go back to, we're talking about the constitutional amendments. The one thing that really just I don't understand over the last 10 years or so, when there have been constitutional amendments that have been very popular and have passed or got close to the 50%.
60% now.
Yeah. That for some reason, people, they vote for the amendment, but then vote for a legislator or a governor who has campaigned against that very amendment.
Yeah.
So the problem is we need to figure out how do we close? You know, we talk about all these issues that people like. It just seems to me that Democrat brand is tainted and they might like what you're selling, but they don't like the person who's selling it.
Okay. And, well, let me ask Ventress about that. Thanks for calling in, Lenny. Appreciate it. You know, that's interesting. I have some emails here, too, from some other listeners who are saying, you know, how important it is that we have viable candidates and how important it is that when we do have viable candidates, we support them. I mean, something very close to home here in Hillsborough County is, you know, the shift in the county commission. We had a bunch of, you know, Democratic candidates that were, you know, really, I thought, you know, good candidates. And they all lost. And, you know, we had an enormous shift in the composition of the county commission. They all but one, I should say, mm-hmm. You know. And so, you know, what can we do to we have a limited bench here in Florida. Like, I wonder if there is a Democrat who could win a statewide race in Florida in the next election. You know, we've got David Jolly, who's declared as a Democrat now that he's going to run for governor. He's a former Republican. He's a party flipper. There are people who don't trust that. You know, he seems at some level to be like Charlie Crist in a brand new suit to those people. You know, can he win a statewide election? You know, can Josh Wheel run a win a statewide election against Ashley Moody? We don't have the resources, as I said earlier. The Florida Democratic Party is, you know, without a lot of resources to promote these candidates on a statewide basis.
Yeah, but bringing in that silver lining.
Go, do it, please.
So if we look at the last several national elections, right, general elections, they've all been about change. Like, people want change. Mm-hmm. Like you know,
I guess that's a charitable way to label the Trump election. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. all of these have been about change.
Yeah.
From Trump to Biden has been about change. And I do think that as time goes on and some of these economic policies that the Republicans nationally are raining down on the people, right? Like, this bill would add $3 trillion to the deficit. Let's talk facts. Let's talk truth, right? That's what the gentleman suggested, we're going to run on that slogan that guy gave us. So once these impacts start to truly be felt, people are going to want change again. And that national momentum will have some trickle-down effect on us here in Florida. I think that we also have to do the work on the ground. And yes, the gentleman's correct. We got to have viable candidates. Or maybe you said that, Shelley. We got to have viable candidates.
I'm quoting from some of my listeners on email.
Yeah, it matters.
Let me ask you, before we run out of time, I've got to ask you, what are your plans going forward? I mean, the rumor has it, it's not even rumor, it's been publicized in Florida politics and elsewhere, that you're going to run for Daryl Rusan's open Florida Senate seat. He's term limited now, so that seat will be open. If you do that, you'll have a primary against State House Representative from District 62, Michelle Rayner, who has already declared for that seat. So let's make some news on Midpoint. Are you in or not?
This is what I would say, is that I have enjoyed so much serving in the legislature and serving my community. It's been the greatest honor of my life, and leading this caucus has been the greatest honor of my life. I committed to myself and my family and my team that we would get through this session and then kind of hunker down and make a decision. So I'll be making that decision and making an announcement about what's next soon. And to me, you know, the way I try to look at it is not so much primary against another Democrat, but it's really, you know, how do I advocate and fight hardest for the people? And if I think I'm the best person to do that, then yeah, I would jump in any race.
Well, since I have you here, and I may not get you back by when you're going to make that decision, talk to me about the differences between you and Michelle Rayner. Do you see that you would be very different candidates?
Well, I don't necessarily want to go there. I think what I would say is that to the people, no matter what I do next, because there's been a lot of rumors. There was a rumor I was going to run for mayor.
Yeah, I got a survey, a push poll about.
Did you?
I don't think it was a push poll, but yeah, it was a list of potential mayoral candidates for the city of Tampa. Your name was on it.
Yeah, governor, attorney general, those other things have been floated around. But to me, like, as I look at my skill set, over the past 7 years, I've been someone who's been able to maintain my values, to be true, to fight like hell for the people of Florida, to not sell out as a Democrat, but to still get stuff done. We passed legislation that helps keep our kids out of the criminal justice system and being tried as adults. Like, we were able to repeal mandatory direct file. I was able to pass unanimous legislation that promotes transparency and accountability in law enforcement, trying to build bridges there. We have protected our abandoned African American cemeteries, which we know is a big deal in Tampa, as there are cemeteries that have been built over with housing developments and other things. I mean, we've worked really hard to bring home resources for sickle cell patients, a lot of whom live in Florida and right here in Tampa Bay. You know, we have the new sickle cell center on Fletcher Avenue, actually named after Senator Daryl Rusan, to try to help that population that often gets overlooked. This session, we even got an appropriation to protect the Hillel at the University of South Florida, as we know that there are many Jewish students who've been feeling threatened on campus, and they've had some security concerns. So I'm proud of my body of work, and I think that I'd like to put that before the people and let them decide who would be the best candidate for whatever race that I happen to jump in next.
All right. Well, I'm sorry you wouldn't make news on Midpoint, but I understand. I understand. So hopefully we'll be able to get you back when you're ready to talk more about your plans for the future, because I know that there are many people who are very interested in that. And of course, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that redistricting lawsuit, for that is the district that is the subject of the lawsuit that's been challenged as a gerrymandered district.
Yeah, and can I just shout out your listeners? Because I've been on this show now a few times.
Yeah.
They were so engaged today. Thank you so much for your questions. It was amazing.
We have the best listeners on Midpoint.
They are amazing.
Yeah, we have terrific listeners who are engaged, and we appreciate them very much. All right, so is there anything in particular that you want to say about the big, ugly bill? Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. Mm-hmm. What about this defunding of public radio that came out of the Florida that came out of the governor just now, right?
Yeah, so the governor released his veto list, and 1.3 million cut from public radio stations across the state, 4.4 million from public television stations. I'm very concerned about this because we know that public radio, public media really helps us to get the truth out. If we want to talk truth, we need to be investing in these radio stations, and it means a lot to our rural communities as well.
So yes, it's definitely.
Just, to me, it is, you know, if you look at his veto list, it's very vindictive. It helps to keep people in their bubbles. It was a lot of attack on any initiatives that have anything to do with diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Of course.
A lot of initiatives for the Cuban community were vetoed. A lot of issues for the African American community were vetoed. And so it's very disappointing to see.
So this veto of funding for public media is obviously something that we're very concerned about here at WMNF. You know, during the hurricanes, for example, people relied on us. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, our programmers here are volunteers. We have a very small staff of paid employees, and people were here during the hurricane sleeping in the building in order to, oh yeah,
wow.
People were here. Jessica was here. Jessica, my sound person, was here, who's putting in the sound out to our listeners today, was here throughout the hurricane period, sleeping on air mattresses and ready to, you know, bring people the news about the weather and the dangers of the hurricane. And you know, that's the kind of thing that people rely on us for, not just for commentary like we're doing today, but for real serious public interest information. And that's the risk of that we're going to potentially lose if, you know, this type of defunding, you know, persists. Mm-hmm. Between the feds and the state, you know, it's going to be a blow to WMNF. I want our listeners to know that. So
yeah, the governor has turned his back on WMNF, and our public radio stations and public TV stations, and the public should know. And so we're all going to have to work harder when it comes time for those donations. We're all going to have to dig a little deeper when you do your donation drives. But the people, again, I'm just so grateful for your show that you can push out this information. Oh, I know, we're winding down. So
yeah.
I got to stop talking now. But if anybody ever needs me, I'm on social media at Fentress4FL. Please reach out.
Yeah, thank you so much, Fentress, for being with us today. It's always great to have you here. We hope to have you back many, many more times. Thanks to our WMNF volunteers, Jessica Green on the soundboard, Barbara Fling, who answered your calls. And as always, thanks to you, our listeners, for your support for WMNF and for Midpoint. I'm going to be gone for the next 2 weeks on vacation. You'll have a guest host. Matt Newton will be here next week, and Gary Gibbons will be here the week after that with State House Rep Lindsey Cross. So stay tuned. If you are missing part of the show, you can always go back and listen on demand from the Midpoint Archives or as a WMNF Midpoint podcast on Spotify or Apple Music. Now stay tuned for Talking Animals. I'll be back with you in 3 weeks. We are WMNF Tampa, and we're out of here.